Join Wondery Plus to listen to Business Wars 1 week early and ad-free in the Wondery app. Download the Wondery app in your Apple or Google Play mobile app store today. Hi, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. Ninety years ago, Las Vegas was a tiny desert town in the shadow of the Hoover Dam. Today, it's one of the largest hospitality centers in the world, attracting nearly 42 million visitors each year. The evolution of Vegas from a turn-of-the-century railroad stopover to a glamorous entertainment oasis is a gripping tale that elicits more oohs and ahs than a performance from the late Siegfried and Roy. With all the gangsters, celebrities, and entertainers that have passed through its borders, you'd think Sin City has just about seen it all. But recently, a global pandemic, a statewide drought, and competition from other markets have given Vegas a run for its money. For more, I'm speaking with Howard Stutz. He is a reporter with the Nevada Independent who spent 30 years covering gaming and tourism in Las Vegas. We'll talk about the city's juicy past and get some answers about its uncertain future in a world in the midst of a pandemic. All that's coming up next.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. Howard Stutz, welcome to Business Wars.
Thank you for having me, David. Appreciate being here.
Las Vegas has a pretty infamous history, what with gangsters and gambling at the center of a lot of it. How did the mob influence the city's identity and culture?
Well, I mean, it was the mob. I mean, you go back to the era Bugsy Siegel built the Flamingo. Yeah. for the mob. I mean, that's, you know, was well played out in the movie Bugsy with Warren Beatty. I mean, that's kind of where it started. I mean, and then the Bowie Casino back in the 1990s. That really had, it was sort of a fictionalized but based on true life tale of how the mob was involved in Las Vegas. I mean, with the mobs from different parts of the country had ownership stakes, or, well, basically hidden ownership stakes, I should say, in the strip casinos, controlled, you know, the people that were running them. There was skimming, you know, off the top of, you know, the money that was the gambling winnings that would come in. And It was prevalent here until the 70s, and then it changed over. You know, we started seeing the mob being driven out by the feds, and the corporate world got into Las Vegas and into the gaming industry.
Yeah, and that changed so much. But at the same time, I wonder if even today you have a sense that early presence of the mob influenced its culture sort of long term. Do you still feel it when you're there?
Not at all. I mean, we have a museum here built in the old federal, the old post office downtown called the Mob Museum. And it's a, a museum dedicated to the mob in Las Vegas and the FBI and the law enforcement. And so it tells the whole history of it. So, no, Vegas, and you have to remember also, gaming, casino gaming is in 45, 46 states
right
now.
Regional
and tribal gaming. And it's very different. It's not, it's an form of entertainment. So the whole idea of the mob is not here anymore.
I totally get that, but the idea is still sort of out there in the ether, isn't it? I mean, I know a lot of people, and I'll just admit to it. I remember when, you know, driving out through the desert from Los Angeles and kind of feeling a sort of sense of excitement, you know, it was the whole Rat Pack thing, you know, I wonder, you know, there's just sort of a, I don't know, that sort of echoes even in American pop culture today. And what you're describing is just, you know, it's relegated to a museum by and large.
But pretty much. I mean, there's history here, and everybody, you know, you want to see the, you know, the flamingo. Well, there's what exists of the flamingo that Bugsy Siegel built is really not there anymore. Yeah. I mean, you know, we have a pop culture industry out here of imploding old buildings. In the 90s, when Steve Wynn imploded the dunes to make way for Bellagio. And, I mean, and then we've pretty much blown up every old building on the strip. So the mob culture is just not here anymore. And it's history now. It's part of the history of Las Vegas.
Yeah. Having said that, of course, this year marked the 90th anniversary of legal gambling in Nevada. That piece of legislation back in the day had a pretty low key reception. We're talking 1931. But ultimately, of course, it paved the way for the gaming culture as it currently exists. How do you see that shaping Nevada's course?
The way Las Vegas has changed, this may surprise you. And this is now, I'm talking pre-pandemic, because we've gone through a lot in the last, you know, the last year with the pandemic. But before pre-pandemic, the strip pretty much, you think of those casinos and their revenues from gambling, gaming revenues, pure gaming revenues were about $6.5 billion in 2019. Mm. That was basically just 35% of their overall revenues. You know, think about it. Most of the revenues, 65% of the revenues on the strip come from the hotel rooms, the entertainment, the dining, the retail. It comes from non-gaming. That was the big transformation of Las Vegas as gambling expanded throughout the U.S., riverboats and tribal casinos. You didn't come to Las Vegas to gamble. You came to Las Vegas for the experience, to come here. Sure, of course you gambled, but you also came here for the hotels and the shows and to get away and all the entertainment that goes around Las Vegas, walking up and down the strip and seeing all the facades and the marquees and all the attractions. You don't come here just to gamble anymore. That you can do anywhere else. That's what's really changed in Las Vegas.
Now, you mentioned roughly 30% to gambling. How big of a role do casinos and gaming play in the state's economy overall? Do you have a sense of that?
Oh, yeah. Well, that is, you know, look, it is 35% of the gambling revenues, but the tax base for the state, probably over half of the state budget is based on the gaming revenues coming in. Mm-hmm. So that has been a question. We've been trying to diversify our economy in Nevada throughout the years. But it is, yeah, still gaming is the primary driver, but it's also the taxes that are associated with the hotel rooms. We just built the city, you know, just built Allegiant Stadium, which is 65,000 seats, the home of the Las Vegas Raiders. Mm-hmm. The gaming industry contributed $750 million to that building process. Wow. That was done through hotel room taxes. It had nothing to do with gaming. It was done through a quarter of a percent room tax on when you stayed at a hotel room on the strip. That money is what's being used to help pay for the stadium.
But what I think it was really fascinating and something that in a sense Vegas sort of serves as a case history for or a model for is how Vegas made that transition. In other words, what you're describing is a modern day Vegas that's very corporate. What is part of history is the mob involvement, of course. And as you've underscored, that's history. That's not what Vegas is today. But if you look at the transition, right? And we're talking about, by and large, we're talking about a point mid to late 60s and into the 70s. How did the introduction of corporations sort of contribute to the decline of mob involvement? We're talking about a tipping point here.
The first company that went public was actually out of Reno, Harrah's. Bill Hara took his casino, Hara's Reno, public. Hara's is really the start of it. It eventually merged in, but it's now part of Caesars Entertainment.
You know what I thought you were going to say when you started to, I heard you say, ha, and I thought, oh, he is going to mention Howard Hughes.
Well, Howard Hughes did buy up, and I can get to there. But I just point out the fact that you talked about corporate. Howard Hughes is a private businessman who bought up everything.
He used a lot of Hughes entities, though, to do that, right? I mean, that was a way that, because he was very much a recluse, and he couldn't show his face before the Nevada Gaming Commission, so he used a lot of Hughes corporations. Right, I mean, that was a big transition for Vegas, it seems to me.
Well, the transition was he bought a lot of those casinos. He owned like seven different casinos at one time on the Strip, was running afoul of potential antitrust issues for the monopoly. But, it's when as Howard Hughes Corporation sold off those properties, they went to, other companies started going public. The Hilton Corporation came in, bought the International from Kirk Kerkorian, turned that into the Las Vegas Hilton. They also acquired Flamingo. They're a public company. As you saw more public companies coming into Las Vegas, it also changed for some of the operators. Steve Wynn, who built the Mirage, he had owned just the Golden Nugget. He went public with Golden Nugget Enterprises. That's how he was able to come up with the money, to fund the money to build the Mirage on the Strip, which really started in 1989 when the Mirage opened. It was the first new resort on the Strip in 15 years, and that started the whole transformation of the Las Vegas Strip.
It's interesting. You have these characters like Steve Wynn and Kirk Kerkorian, and before them, of course, Howard Hughes, I guess, who's, it seems like they all had one thing in common, a certain fascination with not just Vegas, but the money to be made there. And also a kind of courageous streak, too, because they knew what Vegas was kind of built on. They knew what the financial ground was, but they were willing to take those chances, roll the dice, if you'll pardon the pun, to kind of turn things around, to move things in a more legitimate direction, it seems to me.
Well, the 60s, when Jay Sarno was the builder, the original builder of Caesar's Palace, he got money from the Teamsters Pension Fund, which funded a lot of it. Well, the Teamsters Pension Fund was was Jimmy Hoffa, and we know it had ties at the time to organized crime. So that's where the money came in to build a lot of these properties. And like you said, Hughes came in, bought up a lot of the casinos, which is the one way of kicking out the organized crime influence as the Fed started tearing, moving in, taking things down. The way the evolvement as new casinos were built and were built with public money, with companies that went public, that was the big change that we started seeing. And we started seeing, that really started moving things more in a corporate bend in the 1990s, really.
Yeah, the 1990s, it seemed like there was yet another sort of shift, because even though these forces that you're describing were sort of kicking in the late 60s, 70s, certainly, well, today, Vegas brands itself as a more family-friendly resort. Do you put that at the 90s?
Pretty much, because you had Circus, which marketed heavily to families because of their, with their theme and everything. Excalibur opened right after the Mirage. That was more seen as a family-friendly type property. And there was a push on to get more families here, to view, as a family-friendly attraction. That kind of changed a lot. I mean, it's still, because the gamblers didn't want the kids in the strollers and the casinos. And there was kind of a change in direction, especially as casino resorts started opening up around the country. Today, you see families here all the time. There's attractions here that are meant for families. Siegfried and Roy Tigers that are still on display behind the Mirage, and the different shows that are somewhat family friendly. Not the topless reviews or the showgirls that those are kind of gone. It's more of the family friendly type shows, that are on around the Strip in some instances early in the day, and then they switch to the headliner acts and the shows that we have now.
Boy, if you love Las Vegas, you're listening to the right podcast. We're talking with Howard Stutz. He's an award-winning journalist who's covered tourism and gaming for the Nevada Independent for decades. We're going to have more when Business Wars returns. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor, with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. You're listening to Business Wars, and our guest is Howard Stutz. He's an award-winning journalist covering tourism and gaming for the Nevada Independent. Howard, great to have you with us. For those who haven't taken a Vegas vacation since the pandemic, and I think that's a lot of us, give us a picture of what things are like there now.
As we are speaking here in August, we are back to a mask mandate because our COVID numbers have shot up here in Nevada. If you're visiting the Strip, you know, if you're vaccinated, you have to wear a mask. All employees are wearing masks in the casinos as long as you're inside. Outdoors, no masks are required. So that's what's changed recently. March 18th, 2020 is when the governor ordered non-essential businesses to close, and casinos were deemed as a non-essential business. And that was the first time we ever saw the Las Vegas Strip shut down for, they were shut down for about 78 days. It became something where locals, it was hard to believe, you know, you never thought you'd see the casino, you know, the Strip shut down. The marquees stayed on, all the lights stayed on. There were messages flashing of, you know, support, you know, and be careful, be safe, and we'll welcome you back. Casinos reopened on June 4th. And it's been a slow roll, but gaming industry in Las Vegas has come back. But there are two challenges facing the industry right now. The convention and meeting business has been slow to return. And that is a big driver for midweek business. Right. They haven't returned yet. They've been slow to come back. The other big key driver for Las Vegas is international travel. Mm-hmm. Before the pandemic, Las Vegas's airport had flights directly from 11 different countries coming in to McCarran Airport. It had been just one country. It had been Mexico. Canada did start up some direct flights. But international travelers to come here can get here, I guess. It's direct travel business that we've lost, and we're still mm-hmm. waiting for that to come back. Until mm-hmm. those two key points come back, it's somewhat slow here. You know, we're relying real heavily on the pent-up demand from tourists to come back to Las Vegas, to come back and travel, and that's what we've seen. And we saw big crowds on 4th of July because the mask mandate was removed on June 1st. Right, it was just implemented in August again. So, you know, from June and July, we had big crowds because we had the opening of the Resorts World Las Vegas, $4.3 billion property, the first new resort on the Strip since 2010. We've had pockets of the market coming back, but it's still a challenge.
When you said March 18th, 2020, there was a certain kind of boom, ground zero sound to that, you know, to what you were describing. And I guess that certainly stands to reason in a city that, you know, it's literally built on tourism and COVID bringing it all to a grinding halt. Has anyone pulled back and said, wait a minute, let's start doing some measurements here? Is there any way of knowing what sort of toll this took in numbers
when it
comes to the Las Vegas economy?
I'm going off the top of my head. I don't have it in front of me, but the gaming numbers declined something like 35-40% in 2020. I mean, we're pretty much when I'm doing comparisons now for like the monthly tourism totals and, you know, how many visitors have come to Las Vegas in the month and how much in gaming revenue is being reported by the Nevada Gaming Control Board. We're throwing out 2020. We're doing the comparisons to 2019 because 2020 was just such an anomaly and it took a while for everything to ramp back up. So we're just throwing out 2020 and trying to look at 2019. And 2019 was for the state of Nevada was a casinos statewide brought in $12 billion in gaming revenues.
$12 billion.
Yeah, that was the like the third largest year ever.
And that's just the gaming revenue.
That was just gaming revenues. Yeah. So I mean, if you're looking at all the revenues that the state records, if it's in a fiscal year, it's up to $25 billion sometimes when you talk about gaming, hotel, restaurants, dining, entertainment, all that, all the revenues combined, it's like something like $25 billion in a 12-month period. So for the first 6 months of 2021, when you compare it to the first 6 months of 2019, the Las Vegas Strip gaming revenues are down about 11.3%. So there's your comparison of where we're at right now and trying to come back.
Yeah, and still struggling, obviously, as the Delta variant spreads, not just there in Las Vegas, but nationwide. And that's going to have an impact on travel, on vacation plans, on what people were hoping to do before the end of the year. How's the recovery going in Las Vegas overall? I mean, are people feeling optimistic still?
There was an optimistic tone in June and July as things were coming back. You know, we started seeing the shows starting to return. Some of the shows on the Strip. You know, I guess you call it the pent up demand for people to come want to travel. Las Vegas is one of those places that people want to travel to, and they've been doing it. And the question is going to be, as we continue to fight this variant, what toll is that going to take on travel going forward?
I'm sort of struck by the fact that optimism remains, and I guess I can understand the reasons there. People were tired of masks and all of the separation, and I guess wanting to take advantage of the fact that more and more people were getting vaccinated and so on and so forth. But as some of these events return, what do you see as the obstacles going forward now for Las Vegas?
There's a lot of look at the beginning of 2022 as really the comeback, because when a lot of these conventions and shows book, they don't book for like, they don't call in and book the next week.
I mean, right, sure.
They're booking 6-7 months out. So that's where they're kind of targeting the gaming industry here and a lot of the investment community as they look at Las Vegas, targeting 2022, maybe 2023 even, for when everything is back to full on capacity here in Las Vegas. We'll see how this kind of goes forward. It's not like other markets. Las Vegas is very different. You have to travel to get here. You have to fly. I mean, you know, unless you want to drive, you know, 4 hours from 4 or 5 hours from LA, or, you know, another 5 or 5 hours from Phoenix. It's a fly-in destination. A lot of the gaming markets, casino markets around the country in different states, they're more viewed as drive-in destinations. Mm-hmm. That recovery is a lot quicker. The Las Vegas recovery is going to be much slower, and that's what we've seen.
Yeah, and that's an important point, especially now, because the popularity of online gambling was already rising before the pandemic. And with so many casinos closed during COVID, I would imagine that option became somewhat more appealing, certainly to your average gamer. Do you see this phenomenon affecting Las Vegas operations in a more fundamental way going forward?
The funny thing with online gambling, we're not talking about the illegal offshore sites. So I'm talking about legal online gambling is only in five states, New Jersey and Pennsylvania, Michigan being the largest three of it. And what we saw during the pandemic, Pennsylvania's online gaming numbers skyrocketed when their casinos were closed. Nevada only has they tried online poker here in Nevada. There's only one company operating that now, Caesars Entertainment through World Series of Poker. You need a lot of customers for online poker, and people that come here, they weren't going to play online. They were going to play, you know, go to right, the casinos and play. Sure. That's the difference. What the thing with online gaming, I should point out, where it's popular, where it does well, is in high population states like New Jersey, like Pennsylvania, like Michigan. Nevada, Las Vegas is the population center with 2.1 million, and that's it. So, I mean, Reno is still pretty small, you know, and we have a lot of rural states. So that's why online gaming is not really an answer here in Nevada. It's people go to their local casinos, wherever it is.
I don't think anyone's going to place any bets against Vegas, though, right now, even with all of the strain and stress that this has placed on what they used to call Sin City. You know, you got to tip your hat to the longevity of Vegas. I mean, there it is in the middle of a desert. Water's been in short supply, recently, thanks to that drought affecting most of the state. Given those conditions, though, how sustainable do you see the tourism and gaming industry? Or more to the point, what about the sustainability of the city itself long term?
Well, there is issues going on, of course, with water and Lake Mead. The casinos, there's a lot of change going on here in Nevada in the casinos themselves and taking up sustainability efforts. A lot of them have. There's the biggest solar arrays that are used to power a lot of the strip are being MGM Resorts. Has a huge solar array atop Mandalay Bay, the Mandalay Bay Casino, and they just built a huge solar array outside the city in an area called Apex. It's kind of north on I-15. That's what they're using to power a lot of their properties, and you're seeing that type of change. You know, there's been a movement in that direction toward sustainability. I mean, we're in the desert, we're in the middle of the desert here, so. We're learning, you know, it's something that's being undertaken by the state. So there's those type of questions are being addressed by the industry and as we move forward here in time.
Is it working, you think, Howard?
I hope so. I live here. I'm a resident of Las Vegas. I hope it is. I mean, it's a process. And I think it's, you know, it's an understanding. And I think people are understanding the point here of, you know, sustainability issues and as we move forward, you know, and like I said, these corporations, they're, you know, they understand what the stakes here. And so they're you know, obviously this is their home base. So they're going to do what they can do to make Las Vegas sustainable.
Howard, I have to ask one more little question. Do you ever head out to the strip? And if so, what's your game?
Oh, I'll bet on sports. I'll do it mobily. I'll go out to the strip. The closest I get to the strip is when we get down there for the seat of the Vegas Golden Knights play. The arena for the Vegas Golden Knights of the NHL is right behind New York and Park MGM. So we'll go down there for that. You know, it's crowded. And I'd rather we have regional, you know, what's called neighborhood casinos around here that have movie theaters and such. And that's where we go to go out to dinner and do that. But and I don't. Rarely, if my brother comes in from LA, I'll play a little blackjack. That'll be the extent of it for me.
The thinking person.
$20 and I'm done. I'm a high roller, baby.
Howard Stutz, thanks so much for joining us. It's been great to chat with you.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Howard Stutz is an award-winning journalist who's covered gaming and tourism in Las Vegas for more than three decades. Over the years, his work has appeared in the Las Vegas Review Journal and CDC Gaming Reports. You can check out his latest reporting in the Nevada Independent. From Wondery, this is Episode 7 of The Birth of Vegas for Business Wars. I'm your host, David Brown. Kelly Kyle produced this episode. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Kate Young is our associate producer. Dave Schilling is our producer. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez. For Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.